Welcome, everyone, to a special Baseball America podcast live from Sheffield Avenue, right outside of Wrigley Field in Chicago. I am John Manuel, along with Jim Callis and Matt Blood, just after the Under Armour All-America game at Wrigley Field here on Sunday, August 17th, and also 2 days after the draft signing deadline. So we have lots to talk about, and if we're going to talk about the draft and players from 2008 and also 2009, really nobody better to talk about those than Matt Blood and Jim Callis. Matt, let's talk first about today's Under Armour Classic All-Star Games. That's nice and fresh in our minds. Matt's on day 18 of his 19-day road trip, which is just redonkulous. We miss Matt back in the office. We haven't played wiffle ball since he left. But Matt, today's game, 5-4 game, it ended up being a tight game. You had a Greek Canadian in it. You had Michael Gibbons throwing 96 miles an hour. Had some interesting things here and there. But what stood out the most for you just over the last 2.5 weeks about the class of 2009? You've watched a lot of these guys. How do you feel about what's the strength? Let's say it this way. What's the strength of the class of 2009 for the draft?
Well,
on the high school side, I should say.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun as that train goes by.
And we got the L train, so you know we're in Chicago. And it's pegging the meter.
It's been a lot of fun. I know those guys, you don't miss me that bad in the office, but this class, it's an interesting class. It has some good pitching at the top. It has some real quality catching, very deep in the catching part. And
today was a good day for the catchers. Jonathan Walsh with 2 hits, Max Stassi with 3 hits.
Max Stassi is one of my favorite players in this class. I mean, I really think he can catch and he can throw and he can hit. And he's a leader. He's just a great kid out there.
And I mean, he seems like he has a natural short swing. He's not a big guy, like 5'10", 5'11", so maybe that's part of it. But he's got baseball bloodlines. He's like a fourth-generation player. His great-grandfather played in the big leagues with the Yankees.
Somebody has been in his ear for a while, teaching him exactly, you know, the professional way to be, because he handles himself so professionally. He gets into batting practice, and he has a professional approach. He's hitting the ball all over the field, not just trying to yank it out. I mean, he's definitely has had some tutelage.
Well, all three of us were at the game today. Jim, I don't know if there were any impressions that the class of 2009 made on you, but, I mean, we just got done with the 2008 draft. How does 2009, just when you've talked to scouting directors and you're doing on your Cape Cod League top 30 prospects as well right now, it sounds like, just judging by the buzz about this high school class and also what's going on in the Cape, that 09 is shaping up as not quite as strong as 08, which was a solid average draft with a lot of good college hitters. 09 sounds like it's shaping up as a slightly lesser draft here 10 months out.
No, I think you're right, John, especially on the college side. You know, doing the Cape Cod League calls, talking to scouts, talking to coaches up there, there really isn't the typical dominant pitcher or two that we've become accustomed to. There's not a hitter. I mean, a lot of times the best hitters, the best pitchers will be with Team USA, but I don't think there's a Pedro Alvarez, I don't think there's a Buster Posey, those type of guys in next year's draft. You know, it was interesting to me today. You know, the two guys I was probably most interested in seeing, not that they're two best prospects necessarily, but Ian Kroll, just, you know, a kid from Illinois.
Yeah.
Supposed to have one of the best curveballs in next year's draft. You know, I don't think his curveball is necessarily as sharp as it has been times this summer, but I was interested in seeing him. And then, you know, Donovan Tate actually made me feel really, really old, because I went to the University of Georgia, and when I covered the football team there, his dad was actually playing for the University of Georgia. So I guess it does mean I'm getting old, that Lars Tate now has a son who's going to be a pretty high pick in next year's draft.
But absolutely.
He was pretty impressive. I mean, 6'3", just really well put together. You can tell he's a real athlete.
Gotta love the L.
Gotta love the L here behind Murphy's. But I know those aren't necessarily the two best players we saw here today, but those were kind of the two guys I was most interested in seeing.
Well, Matt, Donovan Tate, let's talk about him briefly, because you talked about the pitching, and I think the best thing probably about the high school class on the pitching side is if there's two premier left-handers in Matt Perk and Matzik. I forget Matzik's first
Tyler
name.
Matzik.
Tyler Matzik. So you have these two left-handers who both Matzik had one rough inning, but then he rallied with a good second inning, and Matt Perk looked pretty good today. Both those guys, pretty similar stuff. But Donovan Tate seems like he's maybe separating himself a little bit as a top position player in this draft class. Is he for you, or is that a little hyperbole for me?
Hey, you know, you say separating. The thing about him is he just has all the tools. He can showcase them all every single time he goes out. There goes the L again.
I love the L. The L just pegs the sound meter on the iTunes.
He, you know, he has a tremendous arm, as good as anybody, position player wise. He runs probably the second best of the entire class. He plays great defense. He has power. I've seen him hit multiple home runs, and he has a pretty good approach to the plate. If he struggles with any type of pitch, it is a breaking ball, but you know most high schoolers do. So, I mean, this guy. Oh, and he's a tremendous athlete. You know, he plays football above average too. So,
yeah, and he struck out to end the game from Canadian lefty Jake Iliopoulos. So, everybody's human. Yeah. Jake Iliopoulos very excited to have struck out Donovan Tate today. He knew who Donovan Tate was. So. But it's the Baseball America podcast, along with Matt Blood and Jim Callis. I'm John Manuel. A couple pitchers from the 2008 draft, Jim, could impact the 2009 draft. Let's segue from 09 back to 08, because you had a couple of it was a lot of drama on late Friday night, and we mean late Friday night. The deadline was midnight, and a couple of deals went right up to it. Eric Hosmer, his deal goes past midnight as he gets an extension from the commissioner's office to sign after midnight, which seems a little unusual, but quite a night that night. And I guess the biggest story, first off, Jim, is the guys who didn't sign. And the fact that Aaron Crow and Garrett Cole, two first-rounders, did not sign. When's the last time we had two first-rounders who didn't sign? I don't even think we noted that. It seems like it's been a while since we didn't have two first-rounders sign.
I think it's been years. I mean, the last first-rounder who didn't sign.
I guess 04, you didn't have a deadline, and Drew and Weaver were both very late signees.
Right.
But they both got done.
I think the last first-round pick not to sign was Wade Townsend, which was just a snafu from the start with the Orioles.
And 02, I guess it was, you had John Mayberry Jr.
Right, and in 01, and John Mayberry Jr., another instance where nobody thought he was ever going to sign. And then in 01, you had the whole Matt Harrington saga.
Debacle, but 2000.
2000, and I think those are the three guys this decade. I'm not sure.
2001, you had Jeremy Sowers.
That's right, who didn't want to sign, too.
Right.
But, I mean, that's it. I can't think. We'll have to go back and look. I think it's been a while since we've had two who didn't sign. And, you know, really two entirely different negotiations there. Garrett Cole, that one's simpler. That wasn't a Scott Boras issue. It wasn't a money issue. It wasn't a Yankees issue. Basically, on that one, the day before the deadline, Garrett Cole and his family, and I think to put it kindly, everybody kind of regarded Garrett Cole as the flakiest first-round pick of all 30 of them.
Yes, toughest to read on his makeup and his personality.
Right, and Garrett Cole, you know, 2 days before the draft, or 2 days before the deadline, and his family decided it didn't matter what amount of money was put on the table, he was going to UCLA. And, you know, I talked to the Yankees on deadline day, and they said, we aren't even making an offer to him. You know, they don't want to hear an offer. There's no negotiation. And so that one just kind of blew up out of nowhere. You know, Aaron Crow, I think on that one, you got to blame the team and you got to blame the agent. I think neither side developed enough urgency to start negotiating until it was too late. I think on one hand, you had the Washington Nationals who, you know, from part of the summer, wanted to, you know, their initial offer was slot money.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of figured Aaron Crow was going to get a major league contract. Well, there have been 10 pitchers in the last 4 years, college pitchers, who got major league contracts. And the top couple guys get that every year. And this year, the top two guys were Brian Madison and Aaron Crow. And they did offer him a major league contract toward the end. Then on the other hand, you have the Hendricks brothers, who Crow, well, you know, the Hendricks brothers did have a stable of draft clients. Crow was far and away their biggest client, and I think they were trying to make a statement with Aaron Crow to show we're going to get this guy a big-time contract. And, you know, the number I heard on their end, you know, it's just funny. You hear two different stories. You talk to Nationals, you hear one thing.
Right.
You talk to the other side, you hear the other. But, you know, the number I heard was they were asking for $9 million for most of the summer, and nobody in this draft got $9 million.
Right.
So, basically, from what I understand, I don't think the two sides seriously negotiated until the final day. And a complicating factor on top of that is if you sign a major league contract, unlike a minor league contract, you cannot void a major league contract after the fact for medical reasons. You
right.
have to have a physical done beforehand if you want a physical done. So, you know, at the end, from what we heard, you know, it came down to Nationals were $3.3 million, the Hendricks brothers were $4 million. I'm not sure that would have gotten it done because I don't know if the Nationals would have waived the physical.
Right.
I think both sides just waited way too long. In the long run, they'll both probably be okay. I do think it's easier for a pitcher to hold his value than a hitter going into the next year's draft. You know, we've seen Luke Hochevar went to the Fort Worth Cats. Max Scherzer went to the Fort Worth Cats. Both of them came out making more money than we thought they were going to make when the experience was over.
Jared Weaver held out. He didn't get more money, but he still got $4 million.
He got the same money. So
right.
as long as Aaron Crow doesn't get hurt and he pitches reasonably well, because to be honest, Max Scherzer didn't light it up.
Yeah,
Luke
you're right.
Hochevar was good, but he wasn't. People weren't going, oh my God, this guy's unbelievable.
Right.
As long as Aaron Crow looks good, he's going to get more than 3.3. And from the national side, here we go with the L again. We'll take a little break here.
I love it. It's an authentic Murphy's Bleachers podcast here.
They're sponsored by the Chicago Transit Authority there.
That's right.
But you know, from the national side, you know, they will get the 10th pick in next year's draft, and they'll get a pretty good player with that pick. You know, the two things that will be interesting with that are, one, you know, they're going to have one of the first couple picks next year's draft, so the next draft is going to be pretty expensive for them. Two, that pick is not protected. If they don't sign the 10th pick next year, there's no compensation. And really, three, while they'll get a good player, they're not going to get the second-best college pitcher in next year's draft, which is what they got this year. So I don't think either side is going to come out thinking, man, the Aaron Crow thing just killed us. But they, both sides are really to blame. I'm not sure what the bell is there, but...
I got to tell you, I think it's bad for the Nationals. I think they dropped the ball. I think ultimately they lose in this, and they need Aaron Crow more than Aaron Crow needs the Nationals, to be totally honest with you. The Nationals are brutal. It's the worst team in Major League Baseball. It's not really close. And their farm system hasn't had a great year this year. They were great last year, and they added a lot of talent, but it's not playing right now. I think they needed Aaron Crow. Matt, to talk about the 08 draft a little bit for you, three players got bonuses of $6 million or more. All three of them were guys from the Southeast that you wrote up in the draft. Buster Posey, $6.2 million to the Giants at 5 overall. Pedro Alvarez and Eric Hosmer, I keep saying his name wrong, at 2 and 3. Alvarez of the Pirates at $6 million. And Hosmer, the last player to sign. And also, before I go on, we forgot there's a third unsigned first-rounder, Josh Fields. But because he's a college senior, the deadline really didn't apply to him. So the Mariners and Josh Fields can keep on negotiating. But I believe they'll do so with all deliberate speed, because the Mariners are out of it.
I was going to say, on Fields, I think that's just a case where, going into deadline day, Scott Boras had five unsigned first-round picks, including Fields, plus Jeremy Blesch, who was the only unsigned sandwich pick, plus Alex Meyer, who was getting offered $2 million by the Red Sox.
Running back in the house.
And I think that was just a case where Scott just put Joshua Fields on the back burner. The Mariners said, look, we'd like to get this done today. But, you know, Scott Boras had, you know, he had all these balls he was juggling in the air. I think we're going to hear on Joshua Fields, to be honest with you, probably in the next 2 to 4 weeks. I don't think it's going to go on forever.
Okay.
But I just think with the deadline, Scott had six other high-profile clients who had to sign that day, and Joshua Fields who didn't. So Joshua Fields was just, Joshua, just wait a couple days.
It really doesn't affect
we'll,
you.
Yeah, we'll resume with you in a couple days.
But Matt, what did you think of those three guys from that you wrote up in the draft getting $6 million? Posey gets the most money. Does that mean he's the best player? What do you feel about those three guys, those three contracts?
Oh, well, I think it's pretty exceptional that they all got that much money.
It is exceptional.
I wouldn't say that Posey is the best of those players. He might be the first one to the major leagues of those players. Hosmer probably has the highest ceiling of those guys. I mean, he was kind of hands down the most electric bat in that draft.
And we know he watches ESPNU because he appreciated your performance today.
Yeah, he sent me a text today. Congratulating me on my TV debut.
And we congratulated him on his $6 million bonus.
Yeah, and I said, congratulations on your money. He said, thanks. But, that was a great sign for the Royals. They got him and Melville. Melville, I thought, was the top pitcher from high school.
You could have made the case coming into the year. Tim Melville was the number one high school pitcher on our board, and the Royals get him. I thought the Royals had an exceptional draft.
They did.
I love Tyler Sample. I love Mike Montgomery. I love some of the high school arms they got on the first day of the draft, and they get Eric Hosmer, I keep doing it, and Jim has already done the math. It's on the BaseballAmerica.com draft blog. The Royals and the Red Sox both spending $10 million in this draft, and we think that's at least the most this decade.
But we're pretty sure. For the Royals.
Well, actually, not true. The Cubs spent at least $10 million in the 2001 draft, and so did the Rangers, thanks to Mark Pryor and Mark DeShera's contract.
Just bonus money.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, just bonus money. Those were both $4 million, so we'll have to go back and add those up.
For the Royals, though, getting those two guys, spending that much money, I mean, if you ask me, it's much better than trying to go out on the free agent market and trying to get, you know, some mediocre free agent, when you can go get, you know, two guys who could down the road be top-line players for the team.
Yeah, I agree. And I also like the idea for the Pirates. The Pittsburgh Pirates had a challenging draft. They signed Pedro Alvarez right before the deadline. They do not sign their second-round pick, Tanner Shepherds, who I thought was a risk worth taking. I think basically they make up for not signing Tanner Shepherds by signing their 20th-round pick, Quentin Miller, for $900,000, Jim. I didn't think that Quentin Miller was a second-round talent, but I do give kudos to the Pirates for being aggressive. And I think the Pirates basically in the last month and a half said, We know we aren't good enough to win. We know getting to 500 is not good enough. We might have been good enough to get to 500, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to be a championship team and to have that long-term goal. They sacrificed the short-term, and they spent some money in the draft.
No, they definitely did. I mean, Alvarez, you know, I think by the fact that we saw Alvarez go all the way to the deadline, I think we're seeing, you know, the implication I take from that is the Pirates did not necessarily meet every last dollar Pedro Alvarez or Scott Boras wanted, but they still got it done. You got to give them kudos for that. They got Quentin Miller for $900,000, which is mid-sandwich round money, you know, more than we expected, but they got him done. I think that was a little bit of a consolation prize with Tanner Shepherds. And they also signed Robbie Grossman, Texas high school outfielder, for $1 million. So essentially, from the Pirates' standpoint, I mean, they got, you know, the best hitter in the draft and two sandwich round talents. And I think with Shepherds, you know, the interesting thing with Shepherds is, you know, with the shoulder injury he came down with right before the draft, which knocked him out of the first 10 picks in the draft, frankly, I was surprised they took him with the second pick in the second round.
I agree.
But looking back, I think what they did there was a calculated strategy, actually, so they could recoup the pick if they didn't sign it and spend the money. Here goes the CTA again. At least it's quick.
I respect that it's very regular. It's like every 5 minutes.
So I was going to say with Shepherds, well, I was kind of surprised for a guy who, as far as we could tell, and from talking to teams, some teams thought he had significant shoulder damage, and the shoulder is a lot more serious concern than an elbow injury would have been. Where, okay, you know, second round, but that was cool. I really thought he was going to be a sixth-round pick. Somebody would take him in the last round on the first day, or maybe with one of the first couple picks on the second day. But they took him the second round. But I think what they did, looking back, was to see if he could get back to a point where they could sign him for a number they felt comfortable. And because they didn't, they will now get that same pick next year. And you know what? That's not a bad gamble. I mean, Tanner Shepherds was an elite pick if he was healthy. It took a gamble. He didn't get healthy. They'll get the same pick next year. And if they had signed a healthy Tanner Shepherds, that's a lot better than what the second pick in the second round usually is going to be.
And if you pick Tanner Shepherds in the sixth round and you don't sign him, you don't get compensation for him, correct?
Spent that sixth-round pick on Robbie Grossman, who was a sandwich round talent, or an early second round. They could have taken him with that Tanner Shepherds pick, and they signed him. So they didn't really lose out talent-wise, and they get the pick back next year.
It's the Baseball America podcast, live from Chicago at Murphy's and right near the L. So we hope you bear with the delays. It makes it a lot. We're keeping it real here at Murphy's today. And there goes the L again, a slower L on the Baseball America podcast. We'll just let it go this time. I'm John Manuel. He is Matt Blood, and he is also Jim Callis. And we're going to wrap up just a couple of maybe thoughts on, it's early, but a couple of things about this. We're kind of wrapping up the OA draft class, and we'll have our draft report cards in the fall. All these guys are done playing. I'll tell you, an organization that stuck out for me a little bit was the Oakland A's. Oakland spent a lot of money in this draft. They spent $1.2 million on Friday on Brett Hunter, the right-hander out of Pepperdine. They spent upwards of $600,000 on Rashawn Dixon, a baseball player. They got in the 10th round, getting good reports on him out of the Arizona Rookie League. I'm not so sure about Jamile Weeks in the first round. I mean, I like Jamile Weeks, then they went and traded for a second baseman and Adrian Cardenas. They've got another second baseman. I forget who else they've even brought into the system.
Eric Patterson.
They traded for Eric Patterson as well. Well, it's a AAA roster they're running out there in the big leagues right now with AAA teams' results in the big leagues. But Oakland definitely, even the halfway through this regular season in the big leagues where they were having a good year, they decided to punt on 2008. And between the trades they made in the offseason, between signing Michelle Ulloa internationally for $4.25 million, the Blanton trade, the Harden trade, the draft, they've really changed the direction of their franchise. I would say that right now, if I'm taking an organization that has the most talent in its farm system, it's Oakland right now. I think they're number one. And the number one thing they have is pitching depth. They got Brett Anderson and Trevor Cahill on the Olympic team for Team USA. I think Oakland's draft stands out a little bit to me. Matt, what's a club or maybe a storyline, whether it's a college that got hit hard or colleges or a team that drafted well or that you thought maybe had a rough day? You know, the Yankees didn't sign their first and second round pick. What stood out for you in this 2008 draft?
Well, like you said, the Yankees didn't sign their first and second pick, but they
did. I know you love Scott Biddle, too.
I do love Scott Biddle. He and his cutter.
That's right.
I guess they had some arm problems with him, maybe. But they did sign, you know, Garrison Lassiter late, and North Carolina did take a hit on a lot of players there.
Rough Friday for the Tar Heels.
Rough Friday. They weren't expecting to lose Quentin Miller and Lassiter. And
they thought they'd lose Tim Melville, but they lost him,
right.
Quentin Miller, and yeah. Garrison Lassiter on the last day.
Right, yeah. But like I was saying, I mean, I really think the Royals, you know, came out on top. In
like
this draft,
yeah, like the Royals draft.
And then UCLA got a nice push there with Garrett Cole coming to school. I actually talked to Coach Savage recently, and you know he's real excited, and I think they should be. That's a and Trevor Bauer too, who
coming to school early.
Yeah, he's going to go to school early. We saw this guy at the Tournament of Stars. You know, he was excellent there. So he's got two young pitchers coming in. UCLA, he's got something to be excited about.
All I can say about UCLA is we won't be fooled again. UCLA is going to have to win some games to get ranked high from Baseball America in 2009. That's no offense to John Savage and no offense to their players, but they were not up to being preseason number one this year, and I bet they'll be happy not to have that pressure. So, Jim, as the L rolls by, one last time on the Baseball America podcast, what was the number one storyline for the 2008 draft, whether it's a player or the whole class and the money that was spent?
Well, on draft day, I think there are two storylines. On draft day, the big change we saw this year was that instead of, say, maybe five or six teams taking a bunch of the guys who were supposed to be tough signs and hoarding them, we saw a bunch of different teams take them.
Yeah, you're right.
And we talked about this back then. Okay, they took them. That's one thing. Are they actually going to sign them?
Yeah.
And they did. We saw it wasn't just the Tigers and the Red Sox and the Yankees. You had the Royals going over slot for guys. You had the Pirates being aggressive.
Pirates.
Yeah, I was talking to a assistant scouting director out here at the game today, and he said he was looking at everything, and there were only four teams in the whole draft who didn't go significantly over slot for a player.
It's amazing.
So I think that was one story. And then the second story, which we were just talking about while we were inside Murphy's, shielded from the L's a little bit, is I think it shows how out of date the slotting system really is.
Yep.
I mean, the number one slot this year is supposed to be worth around $4 million, and the next slot is $3.5 million, the next one's $3 million, and the next one's about $2.5 million. Well, the number one bonus this year was $6.2 million. Then we had $6.15 million. Then we had $6 million, and we had another $6 million. And you go on song down the line, and I haven't done this yet.
Yeah, Yonder Alonso get a major league contract.
Yeah, $4.5 million.
This is the seventh overall pick, and a guy who in the second tier of really good players. He's a really good player. Yeah. Justin Smoak, 11th pick. Again, not at that elite level of, like, Posey and Alvarez and, like, Beckham, like the top players in this draft. We're in that second group, and he's getting, what, $3.5 million?
$3.5 million. I mean, that's right now, off the top of my head, I think the sixth most lucrative deal in this year's draft.
And that's supposed to be second.
And that's supposed to be the second slot. And I think, I mean, it'll be interesting. I don't know if we'll actually do this. If you actually lined up all the top bonuses. I mean, we remarked so many times, not on a podcast, but just talking as we were blogging, hey, this guy just got 725, or this guy just got a million, or this guy got 900. We didn't see that coming. But if you actually line up the bonuses, you know, right now, you know, the million-dollar bonuses run out at the beginning of the sandwich round. If you lined them up, you know, that's like around the 34th pick. If you lined them up, I bet there were something like 38 or 40 players that got million-dollar bonuses. And it's just, I think the teams are showing that even the teams think the slots are outdated because they're going way over slot to sign guys and pay what it takes for talent. And, you know, I've said a few times, you know, I've never understood why it's okay to go crazy for, you know, Michelle Anoa or whoever in the Dominican. But teams went crazy in this draft, too.
We do appreciate everybody being patient with us with the L. This is a lot of fun. I loved recording it outdoors. We should do it more often. We'll go out by the picnic table, out by the grill of the Baseball America offices. But, you know, we did request a podcast room when we got in the new building, so we probably should use that. So, fun podcast, and I just think a timely one. Under Armour game, the draft signing deadline. We have plenty more to talk about. We probably will talk about it again on the next podcast. The signing deadline, the Olympics are going on. What a big time of year at Baseball America and BaseballAmerica.com. So thanks for visiting. Thanks for the download. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America podcast. Until then, for Matt Blood and Jim Callis, I'm John Manuel. So long, everybody.
25